Moolala is brought to you by the nonprofit credit counseling agency, Credit Canada. We talk a lot about the estate planning process around here, A, because it is so important, and B, because there's a lot of different circumstances that can inform the things that you need to think about early in life. How you address circumstances relative to your specific environment and your specific family are really critical to think about. So we received a question from a listener asking what they can do if they want to leave part of their estate to a child who won't be able to manage it on their own? And how do they then move forward and set up something like a trust? To answer this question, we are turning to Rachel Blumenfeld, partner at Aird & Burliss. She focuses on tax and succession planning, estates, and she joins us now. Hello there.
Hello there. Thank you for having me today.
It is our pleasure. I mean, for any parent, thinking about the legacy that they leave to their child is a big and weighty decision. For a parent of a child who is not going to be able to function on their own as someone who is neurotypical or walks a more common path, the dynamics are different and the stress probably higher. Where would you start this conversation? If you had a client in your office who came in and said, listen, these are the circumstances, what are the things that I need to be thinking about?
Right. So I think the place that I would start with is really to try to get an understanding of what the issues of the child are. Is it something where they've got addiction issues, or they've got developmental issues, mental health? Or is it just something they're young and inexperienced and, you know, maybe 15 years from now, they'll be okay. So we really want to try to understand what some of those issues are, because that will guide how we set something up. And generally what I would do is set up a trust in the parent's will that would just come into effect only on the death of the parent or on both parents, because you don't necessarily need something while everybody's around. It would really be through on death, generally. Some, you know, depends on the situation. Yeah.
What does that mean to set up a trust?
So what we would, a trust is basically an entity that would hold assets for the benefit of whoever is listed as beneficiaries. It's set up when it's being done under a will. It only gets set up once the person who dies, and then they appoint a trustee through their will to take care of that, to manage it. And that trustee will have obligations and duties to the beneficiary to carry out the wishes of the parents or the, you know, whoever it is who's left the trust, and to really protect the beneficiaries, to ensure that they're getting what they're supposed to get, that the assets are being invested well.
And how does the role of the trustee of the trust differ from the role of an executor of an estate? I mean, it sounds like there's some similarities, but also some big differences.
Good question. So often it's the same person under the will. The executor is the person who steps in right away and deals with an estate. And generally, you know, the first year or two deals with gathering up all of the assets and making sure debts are paid and income tax returns are filed. And then once all of that's done and they're ready to distribute the estate, if part of that distribution is to a trust, that executor can become the trustee of that trust. Sometimes we will use different people or entities as the trustee of that specific trust, but very often it's the same people, person or people.
That trustee would manage the cash flow for this adult child. Are they also managing the assets themselves? And if that's the case, how does the grown-up ensure that those assets will be cared for? Because I can imagine without some instruction and the trustee would need to make some choices about how risky investments were, for example.
Yeah, good question. So very, very often the trustee themselves has the obligation to ensure that the assets are being invested properly for both income to be able to pay out to the beneficiary as well as for growth for that beneficiary and for whoever is going to end up inheriting at the end of the day. If that person, if the person who's chosen as trustee isn't a financial advisor, doesn't have that expertise, they really are required to go out and get that expertise to make sure they've hired proper financial advisors, and that they manage them, that they're reviewing what's being done on a regular basis, because they ultimately have the liability. If gets screwed up, if something happens to the funds, then it's on the trustee. So you know, if a family doesn't really have people who are, you know, close family who have that expertise, sometimes they'll appoint a professional, whether it's a trust company, an accountant, a lawyer, to take on that role, either on their own or with a family member.
What should people know about the cost? Because as you describe it, it sounds like there's some legal work to set it up like a traditional estate plan, but then there's going to be a cost that is incurred over the course of time, because the trustee's work may be a little bit this year, a lot in years to come, that has to be accounted for.
Yeah. So generally, the compensation for trustees, and especially where they're professional trustees as opposed to a family member, but a family member is entitled to get paid for the work that they're doing, because it can be significant. Very often it's tied to the value of the assets and the transactions, what we call the ins and the outs, what comes into the estate or into the trust and what's paid out. And it's based on a percentage of that, of those amounts. Depending on the province, that amount can be legislated, but in Ontario, it's not legislated. It's based on the decades and decades of cases that have come up with what does that compensation look like.
Would the percentage be 3%, 5%? What would be the number we should?
So usually people think of compensation for executors, and this is for the initially, as being 5% of the value. And it's usually never going to be higher than that, but it could be lower. But where you've got an ongoing trust where there's transactions, often it'll be 2.5% of what comes in and 2.5% of what is paid out. But there's checks and balances on that. So, and you can determine in the will what you want that compensation to be, and have an agreement with whoever is going to be doing that. So it can be a flat fee, it can be based on hourly rates, that kind of thing too.
What guidance would you have for people in terms of asset size in which this makes sense? Because what I'm hearing is, hey, it would make total sense for anybody who's got an adult child who's going to, you know, need care and support in adulthood when the parent is no longer living. But if the estate is like 100 grand, you're probably not going to have the ability to go through this exercise and have the hope that that will be maintained over the course of time. Very different if you've got $10 million.
Right. Yeah. You know, I guess one of the things that has to be taken into account in terms of the value of the estate, first of all, as soon as there's the real estate or an insurance policy, you know, RSPs, those kinds of things, it's going to be more than about $100,000. But one of the aspects of the planning that needs to be carefully considered is, if the child is on provincial benefits, which in Ontario is the Ontario Disability Support Plan, even if it's $200,000, $300,000 that's going to go to that child, it really should be in a trust, because otherwise it'll affect their other benefits. That may not matter if there's a $10 million estate, then, they can live on that. But where it's a smaller amount, you don't want to necessarily, you want to be very careful about protecting those benefits for the child.
This is not your first time talking about this. This is not your first time going through this process. And yet, for the listeners for whom this is most relevant to, it's probably their first time. What is one or two pieces of advice that you would offer them as they walk this path?
I think one of the first thing and the thing that I spend a lot of time speaking with clients about is who that trustee is going to be, and whether it can be a sibling or, you know, other close relative, where, you know, that may work beautifully, or that can create huge conflict within a family, and whether that's something, you know, when we talk through what's that going to look like in 20 years when your daughter is in her 50s and your son is in his, you know, late 50s, how will that work out? I think that is very often the most difficult aspect of this for families, as well as, you know, in certain cases, if the issue of the child that they're concerned about isn't necessarily something where they're, you know, there's a disability or, you know, real special needs, but it's more they're concerned that the child can't manage their assets, how will that play out in terms of the family? And should the other siblings also have trust, just so that everybody's being treated the same?
Right.
Because I've seen situations where, you know, one child is sort of dealt with differently, and that can also create a lot of issues for the siblings going forward.
Yeah, and it is in the vested interest of every family to do the preparation, to have the tough conversations now before they're ending up in an office like yours with some conflict. Rachel, I really appreciate your insight. That is a knowing smile, as I'm sure you have seen it all. So let's just have everybody do the right thing in advance. Rachel Blumenfeld, partner at Aird & Burliss, here to talk about setting up a family trust if yours is a family that includes someone who may need some support in navigating their financial life after the death of their parents.